You're listening to All the Best. I'm Maddie McQueen. I come from a family of bike people. They all love mountain biking. For some reason, wedgies and burning thigh pain is their idea of fun. It is not my idea of fun. In this week's episode, we bring you two stories of people who chose a different path than the one laid out for them. In our first story, Yasser follows a dream he didn't know he had.
Well, I don't always know. It's something that you have to look back on sometimes. But if we take it as a sum, like my life as a sum, all I can say is that it's harder to be happy than I thought, you know. I have no other feeling. So I've never known a home, and I've never known a singular Yasser. I've only known, to use the term we're using, displacement. I'm Yasser Morsi, and this is my story. Sometimes I think that my sense of betrayal has to be tied down to my own upbringing as a young person of color growing up in Australia with ethnic parent. That what I'm really reacting against is the fact that I never really had that unconditional support and love for just who I was. The scene of you in the context of your world. Man, I would go to school and they would make fun of me, and your whole world was reduced, or at least for me, your whole world was reduced to either Arabs invading, which was 1 week, or the Egyptians built the pyramids, and then there'll be some smart ass at the back saying, no, the aliens did it, and you'd feel hurt. I remember scratching my skin off, like with my broken glasses, saying, yeah, Allah, why did you make me this color of shit? My family didn't see that, right? So I associated school with trauma, pain, survival, and being bullied on. And I just didn't want to be there, you know. And then I probably went to about 15, 20 different schools, you know. Every school, the trauma of the first day, because they didn't see that. What they saw was failure. As I said, I wasn't good at school. So for about 10 years, I was just roaming around the streets kind of thing, right? Again, I had about 6, 7, 8 different homes. Some shared, some alone, moved in and out. Yeah, it was a tough time, but it was a physical display. I've never really felt like I've had a home, you know. Moving from home to home was an analogy. Kept trying to discover and reinvent new versions of myself to make somebody else happy. Without somebody, it wasn't even my parent or my dad. It was just like, I don't know, it was him, but it was the neighbors that see him, that sees, because you know, he had all this pressure to make them proud by what other people see. You're always chasing some lost image of who you should be. Always. It's not even you, right? It's somebody else's. It's what somebody else wants you to be. And this is where my grandfather's story came into it, because when I was younger, I went to join my prayer and I just followed the actions of what he did. I was a kid, I didn't know how to speak Arabic. The khutbah didn't make any sense to me. And I looked at him like with his eyes, help me. What do I do? If I pray wrong? And he just whispered to me, just follow my actions, just follow me. And I did everything like he did. I whispered, like, you know, pointed my finger up, you know. Just a kid, right? And I just followed him. And then this became my first education of Islam. This kind of hollow inside, not knowing the narrative, not knowing the language, performance to fit in. Right? And I pursued a very hollow kind of quote-unquote authentic Islam, where you'd say all the right words. you'd walk in, assalamu alaikum. You'd like, even you'd know the difference, because a Muslim comes in, we know how to, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. You know, you just been around, you know when to drop the words inshallah, mashallah, subhanallah. You know how to do it, right? Jazakallahu khair. You know, even the hand gestures, you know how to do it. You're just surrounded by community. But deep down, I had no, you know, and I had to be honest to myself. I was performing it because I felt this was my space. I'm going to own this. That was the worst thing, because it didn't allow you to confront pain. It was terrible. It was terrible. I wasn't given a language to understand it. I never heard of the words mental health up until my 30s, man. I never heard of these words. Depression for me, as was understood, was a mood swing, right? Vulnerability made you a woman. I came from a context of bullies, right? A context where losing an argument was like, it was deeply tied to, borrow a term from Freud, castration anxiety. You know, and without using the terms of, like, so you'd become somebody's bitch, you would be this and that, you know, you'd like, he owned you. This is very gendered, and like, you know, anyone who loses an eye. And I remember speaking with friends with this, you know, my mates and I got onto a punch on once because we were debating whether or not Mariah Carey was black or white. Okay. We both sides had no clue what we were talking about. It wasn't about the argument, it was about, you can't lose the argument. Because I grew up in circles where nobody wanted to talk about it. This hyper-Arab masculine circle dominated by people who buried things or swept them under the rug. I had to break through those circles. I used to go into these like monologues with myself, like as if I'm speaking to the opponent. An opponent could be anybody. It could be George Bush, could be my dad, could be the neighbor, could be anybody. It's like, I'm speaking back, right? And then one day, specifically one day, I don't know where it came from, I just heard this kind of voice to write, just write it. Like, stop, basically saying, stop acting it out and put it on paper. I went up to the computer and I spent the whole night tapping away, and I was, right? I was the whole thing, and tuck, tuck, tuck. And then the next morning, I thought I had written a masterpiece. I thought that this is it. Okay. From the first sentence to the next, none of it made any sense. Like, I was like, what does that mean? Like, why am I swearing so much? Like, where's the full stops? Like, this doesn't make any sense. But all I took out of that was that one moment when I was like in this kind of Dionysian kind of drunkenness about just writing, yeah? I knew. I wanted this. I wanted to do this. This was my medium. So I wanted to become a writer out of nowhere. I remember going back to TAFE, trying to do I was trying to do architectural drafting, but then I snuck in some creative writing courses. And here's the other thing. I wanted to be Picasso from day one, right? Like, it wasn't enough for me just to write. I had to break all the rules. So I was like, I'm not going to use any verbs, just nouns, like phone, desk, pain, right? It was just now, you know? And so I was like, I'm going to go back to uni. I remember going to La Trobe and they're like, no. And I remember a person in the office was telling me, so you didn't get in. So clearly the essay you wrote wasn't good enough. And couldn't get into uni. And this time my family was just raging. What are you doing? Stop. They wanted me to do a real estate course. So I'd become property manager or something or other. I did a few online courses. But the one thing about online learning is you don't have other people around you. So I remember like last day of summer holidays, it was like end of Feb. Like, you know what, I'm going to go to TAFE. I'm going to stick to online courses, but I'm going to go to TAFE. So as I was driving there, I was on Bell Street and I stopped at the traffic lights at Waterdale, and there's a big sign, La Trobe University, with an arrow pointing right. and there was no cars in the right turning lane. This was like the Friday before, semester was supposed to start on Monday and this was the Friday. And for some reason, I'm like, just go ask, just do it. If there was a car in the turning lane, I wouldn't have gone. I just took it. I went to uni, same lady, did not remember who I was. I was like, listen, I want to enroll as a mature age student. She was like in a rush, huffing. It's like, oh, you need to. And she's like, all right, give me your manuscript and we'll see. And maybe, and I didn't hear it right the first time. Get your manuscript and we'll enroll you. And I just heard, get me your manuscript. And the only problem is to get a manuscript from Open Universities, I needed a credit card. I needed to pay $10 via credit card. And I didn't have a credit card and didn't have $10. And it was like it was like 5 p.m. was rushing fast. And I had to call friends, can I please borrow your credit card details, please, I'll pay you back, I promise. And one friend gave it to me. I went back upstairs and they're like, we've done it. Yeah, look, if the fax comes in by Monday, we can enroll you, but I'm sorry if it doesn't come in, well, you'll have to wait till next semester maybe. And I was like, oh my God. So the whole weekend, man, it was just like, I rocked up Monday morning, walked into the office and I thought, no way. I didn't believe what happened. Same person that said, you know, your essay's not good enough, was like, just so flippantly, she's like, go down the hallway, take a left, and you're going to pick up your diary, and you're going to take your student card, welcome to La Trobe. And it wasn't until I walked into my first class, and I was like, oh my God, I'm a uni student. Every part of my life until that point was a fatty. This, politics, philosophy, it was there, it was meant to be. And I look back at that turn because that's where I met my wife. That's where I became who I am. If I hadn't taken that turn, Allahu Alam, who knows? Would I have the children that I have today? It was Qadr, it was written. And every time I go past that road, I look at it and say, wow, what would have my life been if I'd gone straight?
That story was by Ahmed Yusuf. The supervising producer was Jordan Fennell. You're listening to All the Best. I'm Maddie McQueen. All the Best is about training emerging Australian storytellers in the art of audio. If you want to be a part of the show, you can start by pitching to us from anywhere in Australia. We also have a team of wonderful supervising producers to help you. Email contact@allthebestradio.com. Voting for the first time can be daunting. When Maisie's mum turned 18, she voted the way her parents told her to. When Maisie turned 18, she did her own research.
I don't understand half of what politicians say.
No, neither does anyone.
That's my mum. She's a staunch Labour supporter. And as we sit outside, stalked by the pitter-patter of our two tiny puppies, I pinned her down to ask about growing up in a Labour household and whether there was any doubt about who she'd vote for.
So once I became 18, my dad said, you know, we're a staunch Labour family, that I would be kicked out if I ever support the Conservatives.
She's a product of where she was born and raised, growing up in Warrington, a town on the outskirts of Manchester in England. Life was pretty black and white. Warrington is a northern manufacturing town that once was the centre of steel, textiles and chemical industries of Britain. It's undoubtedly a working town where deep ideological roots to its history shape its political landscape.
I remember when I started school in 1979 in primary school, and for many, many years there was, you used to get your free glass of milk. I even remember it now with the little glass jars with the little silver lids, and you used to get a coloured straw and pop your silver thing, and that maybe lasted a few weeks. And I remember when I was five, it stopped. So I remember the household with my dad up in arms. about, you know, free milk for all. And then as soon as the Tories got in, Margaret Thatcher, 1979.
My granddad and a man called Len England formed the Labour Party in Warrington. It's my hometown too.
I tell you, I don't care what they call me. They can call me a Marxist, a Jesuit, a flat earther, a Trotskyite, a vegetarian. I don't care what I'm called, because I know why they call us names. It's because they dare not face our arguments.
I grew up with my dad going on picket lines for the workers. They used to go every night, late at night till the morning, doing all of his signs. Voted Labour from when I was allowed to at 18 in England, and probably till I was about 30, always voted Labour due to family influence.
It wasn't until Mum had children and moved to Australia where she experienced how important voting really is.
I love the Australian way of voting, where there are consequences if you don't vote. In England, there was no pressure on you to vote. People had the whinges and everything, but then when you ask them, well, did you vote? Nah, couldn't be bothered. There's no consequences. And my mum used to say to me, you know, women died for the vote. You need to vote.
Mum's right as ever. The right to vote matters. But unlike Mum, I'm not expected to vote a certain way. So if I wanted a strategy, I needed to know what my options truly were. I'm Maisie. I'm a political junkie, but people keep telling me that I shouldn't be. My friends think it's boring. My dad says I don't have enough life experience to make political decisions. The other day, someone dismissed my political views by telling me that I'll get more right-wing as I get older. It feels a bit wanky to say, but I can't help but feel empowered when I think of stepping into the voting booth for the very first time. And I don't want to do that a disservice. So I'm setting out to learn how to vote better.
I'm not interested in who I should vote for. I'm asking, how should I vote? How should I decide which party or what issues I want to make a stand for?
I decided that before I start looking at how I can vote better, I needed to know what issues and policies relate to me the most. So I went and sat down for a coffee with my friend Gabby, and I wrangled her into doing a quiz with me. She's in a similar boat. She knows what issues she's passionate about, but doesn't necessarily know what party reflects her concerns. So like a pair of dorks, we recorded ourselves completing it.
Okay, so the ABC's Vote Compass, this is a quiz that gives you a series of questions and then it'll tell you which party you're most likely to vote for.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So question one. Political parties should have rules that require them to try to get a similar number of male and female candidates elected to parliament. Yeah, what do you think?
I think, so I am very, very much a feminist, that I want there to be more female candidates in parliament. But at the same time, I don't think it should be based on like a gender ratio. Mm-hmm. It should be based on competency levels.
Yeah, definitely. It's like you want to get the job because of your skills. How much should the federal government do to tackle climate change?
Much more.
Transgender awareness should be taught in primary schools.
Strongly agree.
Outloading the results.
We're heading towards social progressive.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're on economic left.
Do you feel more informed about who you're going to vote for?
Yeah, I think it confirms what I was thinking in my head.
So you're not just going to vote for them because you've heard that through the media or whatever. You're going to vote for them because you agree with their issues.
Yeah, it's what they're addressing and how it aligns with my perspectives.
But I don't really like a robot making my life decisions for me, so it was time to bring in an expert.
Morning.
Morning.
Sorry, I wasn't sure what time it is in Australia. Is it a really strange time?
No, it's only 8:10. It's all good.
This is Navendu Mishra. He's an elected constituency Labour Party representative in the UK. He's also an activist with Unite Trade Union. He's super passionate about engaging youth in politics. And through his work during the UK's 2017 general election, helped contribute to the aptly named Youthquake that helped Corbyn defy electoral expectations.
In most political parties, and often it's been the case in Labour Party as well, that young people are talked about rather than given a platform to speak. And what happened was in his campaign, because I volunteered on his campaign in 2015 and 2016, you had a lot of young people who had never done politics or never volunteered for a political party or never been in a political party. They chose to join the Labour Party and work on his campaign. And these were people giving up their own time at their own cost, you know, volunteering hours and hours every week. So the campaign was, the Corbyn campaign was powered by young people.
Although there was a significant youth turnout on election day back in 2017, it was only around 50%. So what were the other half of young people doing? Why didn't they vote? Did they even want to?
People don't turn out to vote. People are not political. People are not politicised. People don't connect that, you know, the reason that they have, low wages is because of a political choice. The reason they have crap public transport is because of a political choice. So I think it's our job in the Labour Party to politicise more and more young people. Because when I talk about politicising young people, the way you're going to politicise them is actually talking about the real issues.
After speaking to Navindu about how the youth movement was set up in the UK, I realised I needed to find an Australian perspective to either complement Nav's views or refute them through an Australian context. So I contacted Tim Dunlop. He's an independent author, speaker, and analyst working in media and politics, and he seemed to largely agree with Nav. I first heard of Tim's work when I came across an article he'd written for The Guardian. It's about sortition, but I'll let him define that in a moment. Put briefly, Tim supports the idea of Australia adopting a more representative form of government, people that actually speak for and stand for their constituents. It's like a political lottery, or a raffle for who gets to be PM.
We shouldn't just be called upon every 3 or 4 years to cast a vote, and then we don't have any other participation in the process. So, you know, a people's assembly is a way for people to be involved between elections. The underlying principle of it is that if democracy is self-rule, then we really should have more of a say in how we rule ourselves. At the moment, we have a representative system, which, you know, in somewhere like Australia has served us pretty well. I don't really want to criticise it, but there's clearly, as a principle, but there's clearly issues at the moment where people feel really disenfranchised from the system, that the institutions don't represent them properly.
It's an idea that I'd never even thought of. But sat here listening to Tim, I can't help but see where he's coming from. Wouldn't it be nice to look at the government and see someone in the House who looks like you or sounds like you? Who's the same age or has the same background or understands your struggles? A student, a tradie, a nurse.
People will serve for a year on a random basis. So the members will be selected on a random basis. They'll serve for a year. They'll consider legislation, and the parliament there will have to take consideration of what the People's House says in regard to legislation. And then after a year, they randomly select a new selection of citizens to work there.
For people who aren't so interested in politics, or those who seem put off by the spectacle and fanfare that seems to arrive for election day, it's hard to communicate the importance of their one vote. But how can I decide what issues should be the deciding factor?
We have to look at, what sort of future are we leaving? What sort of state are we leaving the world in? You know, especially older people like me. I think undeniably climate change is a game changer. If you don't have a planet, you can't vote.
So I'm back where I started. How do I vote better? Well, through these discussions with my mum, Navindu and Tim, I've learnt that it doesn't matter what party I vote for. It's the wrong question. What has become crystal clear through this process is that parties don't matter. At the end of the day, Blue Liberal, Red Labour, The Greens, One Nation Orange, when you take away their substance, their colour, they're futile. I said at the start of this journey that I want to find out how we should vote. how should we decide which issues to make a stand for? I think that for me, I'm going to be looking for a party that proposes effective environmental policies, a strong 5-year economic plan, and one that ensures we stand up on the world stage and fight for gender equality. I now know that I have to be actively engaged in politics if I ever want to see change occur. It doesn't necessarily mean that I have to have a seat at the table, but if I ever want my voice heard, I have to be open to that process, bureaucracy and all. Because the system might not represent us well, but they can only push us out of politics if we let them.
Maisie Ray produced that story. Jordan Fennell was the supervising producer. All the Best would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which we make these stories and pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. All the Best is made at FBI Radio in Sydney in association with SYN and 3RRR in Melbourne. This episode was mixed and compiled by Alina Godwin. Our executive producer is Ryan Pemberton. Jordan Fennell is our Victorian State Coordinator. The All the Best Community Coordinators are Chloe Gillespie and Danny Stewart. Our SYN Community Coordinator is Erin Dick. Matilda Fay is our social media producer, and I'm your host, Maddie McQueen. Shining Bird composed our theme music, and Annie Hamilton designed the artwork. All the Best is also a podcast, so subscribe to us. We're heard across Australia on the Community Radio Network, and we're made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. You can find out more at cbf.org.au. This is our first episode without executive producer Alison Chan. A huge thank you to Alison from everyone on the All the Best team. We miss you already.